This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
Hey there, Arthur from Maine here. Been a little while since I've been around, but I'm happy to be listening to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 192, sponsored by InStock Trades, Netflix, and iFanboy listeners like you and the members. God, I love the taste of a good cod. Welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 192. I am Arthur of Maine, and I want to introduce Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
Ron Arthur. Richards.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan. Hey. Wait, where'd that guy go? That's crazy.
He had to go fish.
It's been years. I'm guessing more than half of the people listening have no idea what I'm talking about right now. Or what he was talking about. iFanboy.com is a website about comic books. We read them and we love them. And every week one of us has the job of reading all of their books and picking the one that they like best. That's the only rule. And they make that the pick of the week. They write a review about it. People talk about it on the website. And then over the weekend we come and we talk about that book. We talk about all the other books of the week. We do a little mail. We do a little joking around. And we call that this podcast you're listening to right here. Before we get started, we are going to let you know if you haven't read your books, we are going to be talking about what happens in them. Some might consider that spoilers. So you are warned. Ron?
Yes.
You're up.
All right, so last week when I was in my store, I was kind of lamenting the huge weeks that we've had of comics, and I said, you know, I just want a week where I buy 8 books, and sure enough, that was this week.
Beautiful.
Wonderful, although then I went and threw it off because I also bought the Nobody, the Jeff Lemire's new hardcover.
Yeah,
so,
I bought like four trades, and that would be way more than I spent normally.
Yeah, exactly, so I still spent the money, but it was a much lighter Wednesday. It was a lot easier to sit down and do the pick, but really, it was reading all my books was kind of a futile gesture because I knew what the pick of the week was going to be the moment I walked into the store and picked up Wednesday Comics number 1 and held it to my nose and took a deep breath and smelled the glorious smell of comic art on newsprint.
Are you sick? That sounded very phlegmy. That
did. I was trying. Well, it's audio. I was trying to over.
I see. I was worried.
No, I'm totally safe. I'm totally safe. Okay. I'm healthy. Anyway, but so Wednesday Comics number 1 came out, and for those who haven't heard about it or don't know what it is, this is a bit of a vanity project that's headed up by Mark Chiarello over at DC Comics, who's like kind of like the art director, creative director guy at DC. And he's the guy who edited the solo lines of book the solo lines of books a few years ago. That was when one creator just did like it was a fat like 48-page issue about, you know, Mike Allred did one, Darwin Cook did one, like, you know, it was kind of very more focused on the art than the story.
So he does books that that pros really, really like and no one buys.
Yeah, pretty much.
Gotcha.
But so
critical words. Gotcha.
So Wednesday Comics was a bit, I don't know where it came from. I don't know where the idea came from, but it was the idea saying, okay, we're gonna take 15 stories, 15 characters by 15 different creative teams and do them in an oversized format. I don't even know what the measurements are. It's huge. And print them on newsprint, very akin to the classic Sunday comics. But they're going to call it Wednesday Comics. And when it first got announced, I kind of rolled my eyes. I didn't really pay attention to it. And, you know, I didn't want to, you know, because it definitely sounded different, but it also sounded like it could be really, it's a risk. By any way you shake it, this project is a risk for DC. Because who knows if people would step back from the standard size of comics or whether or not the newsprint would scare people off or all that kind of stuff. But when I picked it up, I smelled it, and then I opened it up into the huge, you know, newspaper size, and I saw that first story by Batman, story of Batman by Brian Azzarello and Eduardo Risso. I knew that this was going to be something really cool.
There's no way around that. I mean, I got it at the store, and I opened it up on the bus on the way home, and yeah. I kept unfolding and unfolding and unfolding, and I was like, oh.
It was
Then I opened it up, turned the first page, and I was sitting there on the bus with this thing, and I was like, this is fantastic.
Yeah, it really made me remember it. If you go back to ifanboy.com, read my review, I talked about this, where it really, like, if you think about the importance of, you know, like, we talk about comic books all the time. We talk about Superman and Batman and Spider-Man and Fantastic Four and all this kind of stuff. But the language of comics, there's a whole world of strip, you know, comic strips, you know, like Peanuts and all those ones through the years. And I really kind of, as I was reading this, it was making me remember back to reading the Sunday comics and how, you know, that's really, you know, as much as I read, you know, G.I. Joe comics in the 80s and X-Men in the 80s and stuff like that, I learned how to read comics via Garfield and Bloom County and Calvin and Hobbes and Peanuts. In those little strips, you learned about how to read word balloons and how to read from panel to panel and how time passes and how a story progresses. And, you know, I kind of said, you know, like if superhero comics were like high school and indie comics were like college, the Sunday comics were like elementary school. And this kind of format kind of reminded me, this is, by any means, this is a vanity retro project. I mean, like, this is playing on that retro nostalgia tip. You know, a friend of mine was saying he'd be happy if DC canceled their entire line and published every comic in this format. And I don't know if I'd want to go that far, but it's definitely playing off of that what made comics special to all of us. And they, you know, with a couple of exceptions, and I didn't really talk about the negatives in my review, but with a couple of exceptions, this was as close to perfect as it gets.
Well, let's get to the negatives in a bit, but yeah. First, I mean, let's.
Are we just
going to
go story by story, or?
Well, wait. Overall, I like that this took it back to the sort of a pulpy roots.
Yeah,
it was it's very pulpy in terms of storytelling, and you have like a setup and a cliffhanger very quickly, and it's told very fast, and it's a very different format from your. I mean, a lot of people had trouble handling the different format. It's a different kind of storytelling,
right?
And it's different for the creators too. Josh talked to John Arcudi this week on iFanboy, and Josh, what did he say about writing this?
He said that at first he thought, "Oh, this isn't going to be no big thing. It's just a page," and then like very quickly he realized, you know, oh, this is actually a different challenge. It's a different kind of thing,
yep.
And that then became very fun for him, as he kept saying. But I mean, the one thing when I was reading this that kept occurring to me was that, you know, as a writer, these are pretty cool, because each page they've got to accomplish quite a bit. I mean, it can't, basically all the stories are coming from a standpoint of you not really knowing anything about them, so they kind of have to do a lot in one page and make you want to come back and read the next one. And it's very economic and very succinct, and in most cases it was pretty elegant. I was really impressed by most of the stories in that way, to be able to fit something in one page that made you want to read the next page.
And each story is only on one page, and it ends, you know, like it ends on somewhat of a cliffhanger, I think, or each one, because you got to come back next week to read the next page of the story. And what's really interesting is both in the writers having to write in that format of just the one page, but also with the artists to see how they use that space, because it's a wider canvas than the standard comic. And it was really interesting to see how some artists use that space differently and how they handled the challenge of drawing, you know, one complete story on one page, and the use of panels versus space, and whether you get really, like, you know, Eduardo Risso and Batman in the first one get a lot of really small panels, while you
they
know,
lost a quarter of their page to the
exactly, while, you know, somebody like Kyle Baker, you know, went, you know, very, you know, only has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 panels on the Hawkman page, and which totally plays in with the story because Hawkman's out flying through the air, you know, and it's totally airy and open. In each story was, and I'm, you know, I said how this is a kind of a retro nostalgia feel, but in Connor, you said it kind of goes back to the pulpy thing. I liked how each story almost represented a different kind of genre or a different kind of thing. Not all the stories are retro. A lot of them are. I mean, if you look at Metamorpho by Neil Gaiman and Mike Allred, that was very kind of a little retro, a little kind of tongue-in-cheeky. The Carl Kershaw Flash one was very Silver Age-y. You know, the Paul Pope's Strange Adventures, Adam Strange one was very kind of, you know, kind of throwbacky. But then you had things like Supergirl by Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor and the Teen Titans page that were very modern. You know, so I think it was a good mix of style and a good mix of genre or type of story to make it a complete, well-rounded, something for everyone kind of issue.
What were your favorite stories in it, Ron? What were the ones that really stuck with you?
Well, it should come as no surprise. The hands down, my absolute favorite of them all was The Flash by Carl Kershaw and Brendan Fletcher. And that was genius because, number one, how many years have we been saying along with everyone else that we want Carl Kershaw on The Flash? So it was great to see Carl Kershaw on The Flash. But and excuse me as I turn the pages. But I thought that Kershaw not only did the art look amazing in the Flash strip. What I loved about it was you open up the Flash page and there's a masthead that says Flash Comics that explains who Barry Allen is and the credits. And he actually is doing two strips. He's doing a Flash strip where in the first story is the Flash and Grodd, and then he's doing an Iris West strip, which is the Flash's girlfriend, and I'm sure the stories are going to tie into each other, or maybe they won't. I don't know. But the second strip is just about Iris, and all you do is you see the Flash as like a red blur in the background, and you see his like kind of profile on the side, but it's mainly her. And the art style is, you know, Carl Kershaw's art style, but with like a little bit of Al Williamson thrown in. You know, like a little bit of that photorealistic 50s kind of style. There's one panel where she's kind of thinking to herself, and it's just like I love that panel. And that's the one thing that I mentioned in my review is that it seems as if each story had a panel that defined that story. Like there was one panel in every story that was just like, oh my God.
The last panel in the Superman story.
Yep.
And to an extent, the last panel in the Green Lantern story,
and the last panel in the Adam Strange story, like that Paul Pope.
Oh my God!
I want that panel like silkscreened on a lithograph, framed in my apartment, like that. Like
that.
Yeah.
Well, what's funny is that a lot of people, you know, Paul Pope's one of those names that comes up, and people, you know, people are nuts for him, or people don't get him. It's one or the other. And I've sort of been ambivalent about him. Like, I get it. But I've seen original Paul Pope. He draws this big. This is actually how big his pages are. He actually might draw bigger than this. And I think this is one of the times that in a very small amount of space, I can see exactly what it is that people like about Paul Pope in this particular this story.
Yeah, I'm not a huge Pope fan, but I love this page. The Green Lantern story, where did Joe Quinones come from?
I don't know.
Like
somewhere amazing.
Yeah, I thought Ryan Sook on Commandy was great, doing his best kind of Prince Valiant kind of style. Joe Kubert, I mean, give it up. Oh my God, yeah. Jesus. The All Red Metamorpho story was great. I mean, there wasn't the only one that I thought didn't work was Wonder Woman.
Yes.
That was the only one that I think failed because
I think they didn't really understand the format. It seemed like they did regular comic pages here, just sort of squished them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure Ben Caldwell, I'm sure he's going in a direction. There's a point to it, but I thought it was too much packed on the page. It was too busy. It was too messy. I really didn't like it. But
one of the exciting things about a lot of these was, I think, that, and we because we're used to seeing comics at a certain size, and unfortunately, they're even getting smaller. You know, but when you look at them on a computer, you know, we're used to that regular comic size. Like here, when you actually see the art with room to breathe and like space, it becomes all the more impressive, I think.
Yeah.
I think the first page, to see Eduardo Risso's artwork on a big scale and what he's doing, like the negative spaces, the places where he doesn't put anything, those become more open, and therefore, like, the artwork gets more expressive. Yep. The Liebermejo Superman in this big size, you know, when you show, like, his face with a big expression on it or something like that, it was really impressive.
Yep.
So that's cool. So by contrast, when you are, like, that Wonder Woman page, which is all squished up, it was like, oh.
Yeah.
It just, you know.
I thought the Juan Luis Garcia Lopez art of Metal Men was awesome.
And it was a good story by Dan DiDio. I was impressed. Yeah. He did a good job of telling a story one page. I mean, it's continuing, but you still got a whole arc in it.
Yeah.
By the way, how good can Kyle Baker be? I mean, I know he's good, but totally different style.
Oh, it was great. It was so good. I mean, every like the Demon and the Catwoman story was great. I mean, like, it was like every story touched, had something unique that made it special, except for Wonder Woman. That made it special and made it good. And like I want when this is collected, I want to give my niece the Supergirl story, because I think it's gonna be great. Like, it's totally straight up like a kid story, you know. And it's just everything. And like, if you look at the names, like Neil Gaiman wrote the Metamorpho story, and you know, and Walt Simonson wrote the Demon Catwoman story. I mean, like, the talent on this is, it's almost like a no brainer that this would be good. But I didn't know it was gonna be this good.
So, yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. So I can't wait. So this is a 12-week event. So I can't wait for next week. And this is like, there's been a lot of talk about how DC, the tide is turning, and DC is doing better. I agree, but this is almost like a special, you know what I mean? Like, this is an example of DC doing something very, very good, but I don't think this is like, oh, DC's better than Marvel because of this, because this is very much a vanity project.
I do think that, to be honest, I think that the price point is a little high.
Yeah.
I feel like this should have been like $250 or $3, and I would have been, I mean, I bought it, I really enjoyed it. And, you know, it has nothing to do with the quality of work or the format or whatever, but...
Well, I think there was a lot of question, because if you look at it, there's only one ad in the entire book, so they're making no money from advertising.
And I also understand, like, there's a shit ton of talent on here, and there's a lot of probably overhead in putting it together, and I understand all that, but just as a thing I hold in my hand, I'm like, well...
Right, well,
know.
No, but so there's only one ad, so they didn't make any money in advertising, and from what I've heard... a lot of stores didn't take a risk on it, which is kind of weird. Like, I know of at least two stores here in San Francisco that didn't order any copies at all.
Wow.
Yeah. So
I think price point was fine. It's like a big art book.
Yeah.
And I thought the art alone, it was totally worth the money.
Because it's deceiving, because you think that, you know, newsprint equals bad. I mean, it's funny because someone came in on Wednesday when I was in the store. Someone walked by the counter and grabbed one because they thought it was free. Mm-hmm. And we had to be like, no, it's not free. but so I could see why the newsprint would be deceiving. But like, you compare this to a 22-page comic book, and there is the huge pages. Yes, there's only 15 stories, but you know, each story in comic book size is four pages.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I do think I got enough for my money, and I think the newsprint, I see the argument why only for 15 stories that you would want, you know, to be a lower price point.
What's that? I think it was just like the. I don't know. Like, in my mind, something that feels like this—that that feels like a newspaper. You know, you pay like a buck for a giant newspaper or something like that.
Could you imagine
so,
if this was a dollar, though?
I know. That'd I mean, be... it'd be the most. They'd sell if it was like $2.50. I think that they'd sell like twice as many.
Yeah, yeah. But would you buy it at $2.50 with like and a quarter of it being ads?
Absolutely, ads don't bother me. That's what I mean. That's how you get stuff.
Yeah, interesting.
I know that because I work.
Or this way, you get ads through ads or through price.
Right.
I'd rather have ads.
I'd rather not have the ads. I love the fact that every page is a big, beautiful story. There was nothing in between them.
Yeah.
No, I understand.
So, but it's going to make the next 12 weeks very, very special. So I can't wait. And then think about it collected. Like, I want this in like the Little Nemo book size. You know, the huge book.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
when you love a tombstone like a man loves a tombstone, that is what you get on the cover of Green Lantern number 43. This is finally.
Well, no, this is the prologue. This isn't Blackest Night.
Blackest Night starts next week.
Yes.
It's on the top of it.
It says prologue.
We're moving.
Prologue, Blackest Night.
We have moved out of the Asian Orange area, and the lady is vomiting on people, and the story is starting.
Doug Monkey.
And then Connor will say monkey.
I like saying monkey.
Yeah, he does, and that's fine. I accept that.
Everyone I know, I'm worth saying it wrong. I don't care. It's fun. Monkey.
I know. this was a fine, fun issue. This was, to me, the very classic Geoff Johns, take a character, build him up, explain who he is, and make him work. Almost more impressive than that was the work done by Monkey in this issue.
Yep.
Some of the pages and the panels were... really, really high quality stuff. Really high, you know,
he's
almost
great. But in contrast to the art that's been going on with the tan, you know, for the last couple of months, it just even, it was even better.
It was night and day, yeah. Night and day between the tan art and this art. I mean, the page where he, where the Black Hand shoots himself in the head. Oh, that was it was great. It was
that was like yeah. That was like a Steve Dillon shot.
Yeah, so it was like a little bit of Steve Dillon, a little bit of Gary Frank.
Yep, that's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah, and then some of the page layout stuff that neither of those guys do.
Yeah, exactly.
In the middle bits with all the dead people.
So now we know who the Black Lanterns are going to be.
Do we? Do we know completely?
Well, I don't know. It looks like he rattled off all the people who died. So how great would be? How great
he
would
rattled
be,
off everyone who died though.
How great would it be to have a Sue Dibney Black Lantern?
Right. Well, what's interesting is I was going back through the Rebirth issues for no reason whatsoever, and Black Hand is in there.
Yep.
Yeah, Jeff mentioned
totally
that.
I totally forgotten about that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's been a villain. He's been he was kicking around. Yeah, with the hand and everything. Yeah.
No, I know he's yeah. He's an old villain. But I'm saying is I don't remember him being there from the beginning. So he's a sort of nice tying into.
I thought it was interesting to see how we kind of get his origin and we see his family like Hand Mortuary and like the Black Hand logo and the Black Lantern logo was his like family's company logo, which I thought was interesting.
This again goes to that kind of stuff that Johns does really well. These things that seem really obvious and it's almost just on the green side of cheesy.
Yep.
You know what I mean? But it like you go with it because it, you know, like almost explaining it like it's a little bit hokey, but like you're reading it and you're like, I don't care, it's fun, it works.
Right.
You know what I mean? It doesn't throw up that radar. You know, but all the pieces come and they fit together and you get this character. It was fun.
Yeah.
It was a good issue.
It was a very good issue, and I just can't wait for next week. I can't wait to get this event rolling.
So. And it just shows you that no matter how crazy you are, branding is always important.
Yes, exactly. Yes,
that logo consistent.
Your personal brand is always definitely very important. But
I gave out a lot of fives this week. I think I gave that one a five, and then did you give a five to X-Men Forever number 3?
No, I didn't, but I should have. You know why? Because it's fucking crazy. It's totally insane. So
are we gonna get the same explanation for every issue of this? Is this ongoing?
If Claremont keeps throwing these curveballs, he might. Well, first off, so what we learned in X-Men number 3 is obviously Chris Claremont has something against eyes. Because it seems that every character who gets hurt in these issues, something happens to their eyeballs, which is kind of a weird trend. But so this is the third issue of X-Men Forever, and I had a little fun on Twitter teasing people, making them think this is going to be the pick of the week. But the reason why I wanted to highlight this is because apparently Wolverine's dead. Wolverine went off on some little secret mission, and they found his adamantium bones. So within 3 issues, he's killed off one of the major characters of the X-Men.
Off-panel?
Off-panel, yep.
Wasn't that his original plan, though, to kill Wolverine?
Yeah, it was, I think. So,
way back, yeah.
So in this issue, we find out that the person who killed him was Storm. Storm electrocuted him and burned off his flesh, and Storm has turned evil, and we don't know why. And when Sabretooth showed up at the X-Men looking to track down who killed Wolverine because he said Wolverine's his son and he wants to get revenge on the person who killed his son, Storm attacks
his brother.
It's crazy. Storm attacks Sabretooth and lightning bolts his eyes. So now Sabretooth is blind. And apparently he's healed from all the other injuries except his eyes aren't healing, which who knows why.
I'll tell you something. Stuff like this happened in regular Uncanny, though.
Oh, we'd be losing our shit. Yep.
I know, and they'd be talking about it, and it would be huge.
Yep. But the funny thing is that at one point in the first 3 pages, Kitty Pryde in the background just has a thought balloon that goes, "My arm, it won't stop hurting." All right. And then as the story progresses, the Shield people are reporting a Wolverine being dead, and they're like, "Well, we're not sure it's Wolverine because one hand only had 2 claws." And like, oh, that's weird. And then at the end of the issue, Kitty stumbles upon Storm and finds out that she's turned evil and has turned on them. And then Kitty pops a Wolverine claw from her arm and stabs Storm in the eye. It's completely no explanation other than Kitty just going, "My arm hurts." So now Kitty has an anime.
You know what? That is ridiculous.
Yes!
And it sounds a bit entertaining. I don't want to read it. I want to have you tell it to me.
Well,
you know what I mean?
I've gotten several requests from people for me to do a Tom vs. the Flash style issue by issue podcast, which I don't have the time to do.
You should. I agree with that, because I don't want to go back and read those Flash issues, and I don't want to read. I certainly don't want to read these, but I would like to hear you describe them.
So,
and wait, and look at this panel. And her eye hurts.
So literally, Storm and Kitty start fighting, and Storm goes, "You're no match for me," and Kitty goes, "Want to bet?" And then it goes snicked, and then you see her slash Storm, and then the next panel is Kitty with one claw go, "Nobody messes with my family," and then Storm goes, "My eye." Oh, I love it. I love it, Claremont. You're a mad genius.
So are they saying that Kitty's part of Wolverine's family?
I don't know. My arm, it hurts.
No, it's like her big brother, isn't it?
No, I think it's like adopted family, you know. Like, sort
right,
of,
that works.
Know. But yeah, so Wolverine's dead, Storm's evil, and Kitty has a claw.
That's great.
And Gambit's last name is still Picard.
Has he said Make It So yet?
No, he hasn't yet.
He should, though, yeah. In French.
Has he seen everything?
I could see.
I walked into the girls' showers, and they were shy. They tried to cover up, but it was too late. I had seen everything. I think I'm getting better at that.
You are, yeah.
Oh, boy.
You know what my favorite page in G.I. Joe Origins number 5 was?
What?
It was... Rock and Roll goes off and does something. He like saves them from a grenade, and basically, to paraphrase, Roadblock says to him, "I don't like you, Rock and Roll, but God damn it, I respect you." It's almost exactly that. It's like, I don't
he
like
says,
you.
He says, "I don't even respect you. I don't even like you, and now I gotta respect you." I love those guys. I want to see a buddy road comedy between Roadblock and Rock and Roll.
Other things
is Rock and Roll's the guy with the blonde beard, right?
Yeah.
Surfer.
Yeah.
He's John Milius, basically.
Yeah.
It was a film school reference. Anyway, G.I. Joe Origins number 5 is the book where we learned that when it comes down to it, Cobra was going to do two things. They were going to release a nerve toxin a la The Rock, or B, they were going to cause the entire worldwide global meltdown via email. They stopped the nerve gas attack. But it turns out that all of the shit that we've been going through for the last 6 months, that was Cobra.
Yep. They said they emailed all the brokers and stuff, told them all about the subprime mortgages they could do and how they could make money off of it. And now we're screwed.
which is – it's a, they referenced Bernie M before they knew him. Those parts were a little off, I'd say, because – to be fair, how many mortgage brokers are going to take their spam seriously? Oh, this one here says to get rich quickly. I think I'm going to do this. And then they all do. But other than that, it's actually a really fun issue. It was.
This supposed to be the last one, right? I mean, at the end, it says like the end. And it sort of wraps up the arc. And that, I guess this would have been it. But now they're continuing it, which makes no sense. But whatever. It's much better than the regular book. So I'll go for it.
Nope. Yeah, that's totally fine.
Snake Eyes got his face burned off. So now we know.
He didn't have much face to get burned off left, did he?
Well, it was healing. He had the bandages on his face, and then he got his face set on fire. So it's really
done. I forgot about that. I love that page because basically it's like Snake Eyes attacking Chimera, who I assume has to be Cobra Commander.
I assume that as well.
And like he's got a flaming Dormammu head.
Yes.
And he's like, "What are you? Some kind of demon?" I'm like, yes. This is excellent. It's a fun comic book.
And the trade, I checked, the trades are coming out soon, like the Origins trade and the Cobra, G.I. Joe Cobra trade. So those are, if you haven't read these and they sound interesting at all, in the next few months they're going to be out.
Good stuff. Those are fun. I think if I had my druthers, if I had had the pick of the week this week, I would have gone with BPRD number 47, BPRD 1947 number 1. As you may remember, I really liked the last one, the 1946. This is written by Joshua Dysart and had art by Paul Azaceta, but this time the art is by Gabriel Ba and Fabio Moon.
Ooh, really? I didn't know that.
It's really nice.
Nice.
I mean, it, like them working in the Hellboy world. It's a story that takes place in 1947. It's about Trevor Broom, young Hellboy, kid Hellboy is in it. Just a really elegant and nice comic book. It works in that, like, this thing happened in 1700. And it's the very early formations of the BPRD, and they all have to go check out like this castle from the 1700s in France or Belgium. And it's such a nice book. It was a really good, basically what is a Hellboy story, but before Hellboy. So and the moon and the moon and Bard. I'm loving stuff that I see from them more every day. Like when they get colored, it's, you know, especially by Dave Stewart. But when they get colored, it really pops and it comes alive in a way that I don't think I felt so much when I was looking at Casanova. This was a 5-star book, easy, really, really good. If you've ever wanted to try out BPRD or any of the Hellboy stuff, this is a, you can just read this, you'd be totally good to go.
Cool.
You know, it was a short week, small week, but it was still a good week.
There was a lot of quality. Great. Yeah, there was a lot of quality.
Great books. You know what else is great? I don't know, getting DVDs and Blu-rays in your mail. You can go to www.netflix.com/ifanboy, where they've got over 100,000 titles. You can use that to sign up for a free trial. You can get all sorts of movies, no late fees, free shipping both ways. You can watch them on your computer or your Xbox 360.
You know what's really funny is that Chris Neisman's been dating Netflix, and it's going pretty well, but don't tell anybody. Netflix cheated on him with us. So,
really?
Yeah. It's between you and me. Don't tell anybody.
I didn't write that joke. The majority of the shipments go in just one day, and you get a plan starting from just $4.99. I honestly, completely truthfully now, I don't remember what life was like before I had Netflix, and I don't want to go back to it. There it is.
Yes.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I got Benjamin Button in the mail.
I got The Holiday. I don't know how.
Yes, you do.
No, I don't. I literally do not remember clicking on that. I don't. No, I honestly don't. Because you know
Kate
why?
Winslet. Kate Winslet.
No, I know. I like Kate Winslet, but Jack Black. I don't need Jack Black and Kate Winslet in the same movie. And I made that distinction. I would have seen that movie in the theater, but I didn't want to see Jack Black and Cameron Diaz and all that kind of stuff. So yeah,
I got
Kate Winslet. That's why.
I got Encounters at the End of the World, which is a documentary about Antarctica, shot and narrated by Werner Herzog.
Cool.
And just to listen to him talk for an hour and a half is wonderful. Like, he'll do an interview with somebody, and then he'll call them insipid in the narration. This is an insipid person. I don't want to listen to them anymore. And they go. It's so good.
Awesome.
Anyway.
I wanted to point out the next book, Dark X-Men The Beginning. Matt Fraction, I don't know if you're listening, but I'm holding a book called Dark X-Men #1 in my hand. I'm just saying.
Where's my money?
Moving on. That's all I wanted to say about that one. but X-Men Legacy #226 is – so the X-Men Dark Avengers Utopia storyline is continuing, and X-Men Legacy has finally moved out of its Mike Carey writing his kind of own contained stories about Professor Xavier and the X-Men's history, and has brought this book back into the fold, into the ongoing continuity. It's the next chapter in Utopia, and the longest night in X-Men and San Francisco history is continuing as contrived and forced riots are happening all across San Francisco. And the only point I wanted to make here is that there's a scene with Rogue and Gambit and Danger that takes place on 16th and Guerrero. And I used to live two blocks from here, and it doesn't look like this at all. So,
okay.
Yeah. But anyway, so
there also aren't riots or mutants outside your door. So.
It's literally this is the most like I keep describing it, contrived, forced upon story in a long time that I've read. It just literally is out of nowhere, and it just continues to go, and because of it, I can't take it seriously, you know, because everything that was happening in the X-Men world now is just seemingly put on hold for this little riot. So I don't know. Meh.
I think so, if I was from Boston, I'd be offended by Amazing Spider-Man Annual 36, but I'm not. So.
Well, I thought that it was a really good annual, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was great.
It was a great issue. It was a 5-star book.
Yeah, it totally was. Pat Olief. Oh,
Jeter sucks.
Yeah. The Jeter sucks line was very funny.
Love that. Kept going.
But I thought it was really ballsy because of the end or the twist.
Well, this whole thing is that Aunt May, who's been portrayed younger and younger in the regular books, but she's back to being looking like she's 90 in this book, is getting married to J. Jonah Jameson's father, and so they're in Boston for the engagement party.
Engagement party, yeah, yeah.
And some other dude, another part of the country, you flash back to when some dude had his life ruined by seemingly Peter Parker, and he shows up to get revenge.
Before that, though, the banter between Peter and Jay Jonah at the Gazer party was hysterical.
Oh, yeah, it was great.
It was great.
So then this guy attacks the reception, attacking Peter Parker. He changes into Spider-Man. They fight. We find out that The guy in the beginning who we thought was Peter Parker was actually Ben Reilly from the Clone Saga, and he was the one that ruined this guy's life. And now it was great, but then that one page where they flash back to the 90s where we see the mullets and we see Ben Reilly and we see everything that was bad about Spider-Man comics in the 90s.
The costumes and everything. It was bad about how we all looked back then.
It was everything about it.
So now the thing about it is that Spider-Man, for the past year, Spider-Man has been one of the best years of Spider-Man as far back as I can remember. And is it just like, is it tempting fate? Is it playing with fire by trying to bring back Ben Reilly?
Oh, I think it's a challenge thing. I think a writer goes, oh yeah, watch this. Like, I think that the guys went, you know what? We're doing so good. We can make this so cool. We're going to even make this cool. Yeah. And, you know, if it works out, it'll be awesome. In the way that, like, you know, when they brought back Bucky, that was awesome. Yeah. You know, so you can give it a shot, I guess. I just had fun with this. Like, I didn't even worry about any of that stuff because I never read any of it in the first place. Like, I just had fun with it. It was a fun issue. It wasn't – I didn't think it was making fun of Boston. It was sort of – it was, but in the way that you do
it. Oh, it totally was, but I mean that's – I'm fine with that. Yeah.
No, I know that, but like at the, like it was – you know, he was saying it's a good place. They like him.
Cheater sucks.
Cheetah sucks. Not saying it right. Cheetah sucks.
And he had that. He had the hot Boston cousins who were probably slutty.
That was great. The whole when he's talking about how hot his cousins are.
Just a little trashy.
Oh god. Real quickly, Green Arrow, Black Canary. The story I could do without, but that the backup feature with the Bill Sienkiewicz finishes over Mike Norton's layouts. Awesome.
I'm sure it looks beautiful. I just can't stand the story.
Yeah,
I dropped it months ago.
It's literally where it's the point now where I just buy it for the art and I just flip through and but then the Sienkiewicz art was just really cool to see because it's like because Sienkiewicz was penciling was doing the finishes over Norton's layout, so it's definitely in Sienkiewicz's style, but you could see Norton's style in the layout. If that makes sense, you know, like so it's cool. It's cool little hybrid of styles, which is you know awesome. So I dug it.
Oh, cool. Connor, surprising book for me this week, and I think you too, was The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly number one by Chuck Dixon out of Dynamite. You pick this one up, right?
Right. This is the sequel to the other
Man
one.
With no name. Man with no name from Christos Gage?
Christos Gage, also Dynamite. That was pretty good. That was like a solid Western. Yeah. This was much better. This was like a real, real good start to a Western.
It was real good. I was kind of surprised by it because I'd kind of been underwhelmed by the other story, and I just sort of read this one on a whim. But it was fun. It was just you know sort of classic Western, and if that's the kind of thing you're looking for, this is definitely worth a look at.
It was definitely a step up in all realms, I think, from the last one.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Cool.
On to the user reviews.
Robbie Deswanar wrote about Batman 688, which he gave the story a 3 out of 5 and the art a 3 out of 5. And of all the iFanboy community, 0.2% made it the pick of the week at time of recording. And Robbie says, Batman 688 really delivers in the beginning with what you've probably already seen in previews, but everything just falls so damn flat after that. I don't care about Two-Face and Penguin anymore. They really need to either step up their game or get out of it. So a little discourse in the Batman universe.
Discord. Well, I think it's weird because this is when his second issue. He's only doing four, so that he's only got two left.
Yeah.
It was this issue. It's strange because as with all books with multiple versions, they don't all fit together. You know, this doesn't really fit into the Grant Morrison world, even though it's the same characters. But it's telling a different portion of it. And what this is telling is Two-Face and the Penguin reacting to the new Batman, and Two-Face figuring out that it's Dick Grayson because he's watching the footage on the news, and he sees that he's smiling while he fights, which is something that Batman would never do, but something that Dick Grayson would do. So,
interesting. That's interesting.
It's how well he knows the characters. Two-Face is like Batman. It's like Dick Grayson's Joker. He's his main nemesis, so yeah. He knows him pretty well. And the other thing that he said was, in the past, Bruce would always disable the security cameras so there wouldn't be footage of him, but here Dick's leaving them alone so people could see that Batman's still around.
Ah, interesting.
So suddenly the news is flooded with all this footage. So they kind of do a media angle where all the news people, they're like, you know, footage of Batman everywhere suddenly. So they're all
that's
doing
a really neat concept.
Yeah, that's clever.
Yeah, it's part of the whole tapestry where I think you know they're really well thought out stories and what they're really looking at all the angles here. But yeah, I did like it. It was good. He does, you know, that's why I'm bummed that he's leaving so soon. Winnick does a good Batman book.
All right.
This says Silver Age Tim, but I know there's
Tom.
A Tom.
Sorry, that's a typo. Okay. There's your mistake. There's the mistake. Like there's the mistake in the script.
Silver Age Tom's brother, Tim.
The Enchanter.
The
Silver Age Tom, who hates Tim, by the way. read North 40 number one. He gave the story a 2 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. Yet, 0.41% of the user base picked this as their pick of the week. Aaron Williams does a divergent left turn from Nodwick and other gaming funnies to turn his attention to crafting a Lovecraftian horror tale. I came into North 40 without knowing anything about it, but I pretty much bought the thing on a whim. On a surface, it's a really good-looking book, and given enough time to grow, this could become a solid series, but I don't think it's there yet. We're going to take Tim's word on it.
Yeah, a lot of people are talking about North 40 this week. It came out of Wildstorm, and I guess it's like a horror, like Lovecraft/horror book.
It's not about the Dallas Cowboys.
No, it's not. But the one thing I did hear the most out of it was that the art looked really good, but the story was not so much. So, yeah, who knows? So,
well, Silver Age Tim, he succinct it up pretty well.
Tom.
It says Tim.
I'm going by my script, man. It says Tim.
The one damn mistake. So if you have an opinion about one of this week's comics, you can go to ifanboy.com/comics where you can do your pull list and you can rate comics and review them. The number one community book was Green Lantern this week, and number two was Wednesday Comics, showing that the community doesn't know what they're talking about. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
Oh, it's true.
But yeah, so go to ifanboy.com/comics. It's a great place to check out each week's books as they come out.
Mm.
So so it's the beginning of the month, and that means that iFanboy, it's a book of the month. And I woke up on June 30th and go, wow, I got to write a book of the month. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
That's how it works.
Yeah. But so this month, if you go to ifanboy.com, you might have already read the review of it, but we're going to take a little bit to talk about it. I chose an anthology that came out from Image Comics called This is a Souvenir, The Songs of Spearmint and Shirley Lee. And this is another – this is the third kind of music-inspired anthology that Image has put out. The first one being Put the Book Back on the Shelf, which is the comic stories inspired by Belle and Sebastian. The second one came out last year in the much critically acclaimed and Eisner and Harvey nominated comic book Tattoo, which was the stories inspired by Tori Amos, which is a big old 500-page
beautiful
yeah,
book.
Monster. Yeah, really nice. This one is not – it's more stories than the Belle and Sebastian one, but not nearly as thick as the Tori Amos one. But it keeps the oversized format that the Tori Amos one had, which is basically it's a 12-inch by 12-inch like a record album size, big square, big kind of big book. And it is comic stories inspired by the band Spearmint, and specifically the main songwriter from Spearmint, Shirley Lee. Spearmint is a indie Britpop band that was popular in the 90s, and despite my Britpop fandom, I had only heard of them, yet I had never heard anything by them. So
I have never heard of them.
They're real. I mean, they have their own label. They are like consummate indie band. They had some popularity in like 97, 98 when a couple of their singles broke into the top 40 charts in the UK. But by no means did they achieve the Oasis level or any other kind of Britpop bands that kind of grew into over to America or anything like that. So I was really interested in it because I was like, okay, wow, this is an opportunity for me to be like everyone who reads Phonogram who doesn't know about those bands. Or, anybody who reads the Belle and Sebastian book and has never heard Belle and Sebastian or Tori Amos or whatever. So I was really curious. I didn't go out and listen to Spearmint until after I read the book because I wanted to see if the stories by themselves were enjoyable. And they absolutely were. This was a lot of fun to read. I'm starting to think that I'm an anthology guy. I'm really enjoying the world of anthologies.
You just come out to us? Look, guys, I've been meaning to tell you this for a while, and I've always suspected it. But
this anthology, it starts off, and not surprisingly, and I wonder if, as they do these in the future, they're going to go to Kieran and Jamie from Phonogram and have them do a story for each of them, because the first story is a Kieran and Jamie Phonogram story. That was great. It was, it's a short, like 4 or 5 page story, but to see Jamie do art in a much bigger canvas was really, really cool. He used the space and they used typography much differently than anything I've seen. If you go to my review, I scanned in, or I had a scan of my favorite page, which just had a huge, turn it up as the text in the middle of the page and with a great rendering of this kind of scene from the song.
That's enough to sell me. I saw that and heard there was an oversized Phonogram, and I went, yes, please.
Yeah, it was great. But you know, some of the other stories were by like Jamie S. Rich wrote a couple. B. Clay Moore wrote one. Derek McCullough wrote one. China Clugson did one. Mark Ellerby did one. So there's some names that we recognize, but then there are some names that I haven't recognized. You know, like Mike Holmes and where's the other one that I really really liked. Tony Lee and Kevin Colden did a great story called A Bench in the Park, which is about a woman who visits a bench that was dedicated, you know, in one of those benches is in memory of, and turns out it's a guy she went to college with who died of cancer, who was the father of her child, and she never got to tell him because, you know, like in tragic story, and her 16 years later visiting, you know, this memorable bench and telling them about what their daughter is doing and kind of, you know, looking back on it. And the art was just this beautiful use of pastels and color, and it was just great, and it's just really cool. The way they do it is that each story starts off with a page with the lyrics to the song, and then you read the whole story. And some of the stories are short, you know, 3 or 4 pages. Some of them are a little longer. I think the longest one was about 10 pages or so. Some of them are very conceptual, whereas some of them are very you know, very wordy and very thought out. You know, pretty much every, you know, no consistent style. Every story was, you know, has the creator's own kind of footprint on it. And really it was just so much fun to sit down for an hour and just like get lost in each one of these stories. So I had a lot of fun reading it. And, then I went back and listened and downloaded some, Spearmint songs. Actually, a friend of mine sent me some of them, cause you can't actually download them here. Cause a lot of them are, cause they're an independent band. You can only get import CDs, which are expensive. So don't tell anyone. And, and so it was cool then to go back and to listen to some of the songs and read the stories, you know, and get that context. The B. Clay Moore story with art by Kevin Mellon called A Different Lifetime was just Kevin Mellon's art was just awesome. It was just really, really cool. So I don't know. If you like anthologies, if you like music, but if you just like something off the beaten path in some different, you know, different kind of creators, this is definitely a good option. So.
I don't think books like this need to be tied to the music thing. I think they are enjoyed regardless. And I think that,
yeah, and that's
saying if you like music, you like this book. Makes people think they don't like music, they won't like the book, and I think that's wrong.
Right? Yeah. No. And that's what kind of my kind of thesis or hypothesis going into this was that I don't have the context of the music. Let me see if I enjoy it, and I absolutely did. So.
Cool. I'm gonna check it out when I see it.
So you can definitely get it from Amazon. I'm pretty sure you can get it from In Stock Trades at time of recording. I'm not really sure, but I think they're going to get back in stock. But if you want to get this or any other trade paperback, go to In Stock Trades. InStockTrades.com is your source for all trade paperbacks. They've got up to 37% off on their books. You get free shipping on orders over $50. They've got over 5,400 trade paperbacks in stock. Every Wednesday, they got all the new releases in there, so you can get them as soon as they come out. And when you make an order, it usually ships within 48 hours. So InStockTrades.com is the place to order trade paperbacks online, and hopefully they will get This Is a Souvenir, The Songs of Spearmint and Shirley Lee in stock soon, and you could buy it. So,
yay. Email time. Chris from Grand Forks, Michigan says, I recently received my copy of The Roberts in the mail. Last night I proceeded to sit down and read it when I came across a glaring printing error. The same page is printed twice in a row, in addition to pages missing throughout the book. So my question is, if you know whether publishers or retailers would be willing to exchange misprinted trades for correctly printed ones.
Absolutely. If you got a misprint, you should go back to the store where you bought it and return it. It's defective merchandise. If the store gives you a hard time, email or write a note to the publisher and they will replace it. I've heard, you know, we know several retailers who this has happened to, and it's a reality of the business. And the thing is that you didn't get what you paid for. So don't be afraid. Don't feel like you're stuck with it. Issues are a little different, but trade paperbacks, absolutely.
Only really once in my life have I gotten a misprinted issue and I returned it to the store and they changed it. So yeah. It wasn't a problem, but it hasn't happened a lot.
Yeah, since you're the customer, you are allowed to get what you paid for, you know?
I don't think it's ever happened to me, but like I've done things where like I bought issues that I didn't mean to and I brought those back, so I assume that if they'll take those, then... I bought like a reprint and I thought it was the next issue, or like I've done things where I bought like two of something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No.
Josh goes in with a blindfold. He's the force to pick his stuff.
It's like supermarket sweep. You've got 30 seconds to buy your books, and he just it's a mad dash.
Sam from Philly says, "What happened to Horizontal Comics? I seem to remember Marvel putting out horizontal issues relatively frequently, but the last ones that I can remember, the 2001 New X-Men and the Uncanny X-Men annuals. I personally would like to see Horizontal Comics make a comeback, unless I'm missing something. Can you guys think of anything?"
just in general?
Those are the only ones I remember.
I remember Marvel played with it a little in the 90s, and they brought it back in the 2000s. I think it's a – and I got scared because I got the latest issue of Exiles, and the first page was horizontal, like the recap page. And I went, please don't be a horizontal issue.
I hate it in a book, like when it changes during the book. I don't like that.
Yeah. I don't think anybody's really done it recently, and I think for a reason. Like, I don't think it works in the issue format, personally.
I mean, there's no reason that it couldn't or doesn't, but – yeah, I don't know. I mean, we're like locked into a format. I think sometimes it can work in trade form. If you think about like 300 is kind of like that. You get the 300 graphic
novel. Totally is like that.
Right, but the issues weren't like that. The issues were two-page spreads that then those two-page spreads became a page in the book, right?
Well, it's basically the same thing. Yeah. Well, no, it's not really. We were actually – Josh and I were talking to somebody about digital comics this week and talking about how – aspect ratio might change because all monitors are horizontal. So if eventually comics go digital, then maybe they'll change how comics are drawn. They'll lay them out differently so they'll be fill your screen rather than up and down.
Yeah, possibly.
That's theoretical.
In that standpoint, what I think is what's going to happen is more like what Miller did with the two-page spread where you can print something in two-page spreads and then it looks good on a widescreen monitor. But who knows? I mean, it's anybody's game, really. I think when you've got a page that is the standard comic book page and then you rotate it 90 degrees to be horizontal and then you've got to hold the book, you know, kind of horizontal and then open it from the top up. I think that's a challenge that a lot of people don't want to deal with. You know,
Another way around it is that Bendis does it a lot in his Avengers books and stuff, and in Powers, but also this week's World of New Krypton was done with a lot of two-page spreads that went all the way across the page, and that's sort of like doing that. The only thing about that I don't like about those is I'm never certain
which way to read. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you end up reading the middle of the panel when you should be going to the right.
That happened in New Krypton. That definitely happened to me this week.
Yeah. I don't mind if you're gonna use arrows if there's gonna be at all unclear. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. All right. So if you have a question that's you need to have answered, email us at contact@ifanboy.com. We get your question on the show or on the letter column on the website every week. We'd love to hear from you. So write in contact@ifanboy.com. All right. Our first voicemail is for Josh.
It's a question we've never gotten
ever before.
Guys, this is Mike. I just had a question about the Green Lantern comics. What would be a better arc to start on, Rebirth or Secret Origin? My girlfriend's interested in the book thanks to Blackest Night, but I'm not sure which story to start with. She does know a little bit about Green Lantern from the New Frontier movie, but that's about it. Thanks, guys. Talk to you later.
Before we get started, there is one thing I would like to say, and it's...
This is the single most question we've gotten this year.
By far,
yeah.
We get it once a week at least.
I wrote an article 1 week on the site, and if you actually go to iFanboy and you search Green Lantern, where do I start? Or if you go on Google and you search Green Lantern, where do I start iFanboy, it should be the first thing that comes up. Because we get it so very often. And that tells me you're not going to the site, Mike. So there's a lot of other stuff there that we can't cover here. Read them in the order that they were published is my recommendation always. Start with Rebirth and then read Sinestro War and then read Secret Origin because they're written in such a way that they refer back to those stories even if they didn't chronologically come in that way.
Yeah. It's funny because, I mean, it just shows that, you know, the attention Green Lantern's been getting. And when I was in the store on Wednesday, somebody was in there who has never read a DC comic at all but wants to read Green Lantern. And we were saying whether or not the issue that came out this week was a good point to start or not, of which my opinion was, just dive right in. But
it is just the Green Lantern's not in it. So if that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, that's the only weird thing about it.
Ultimately, I think we netted out at next week's issue with Blackest Night being as the...
John says it's written like Sinestro Corps War, where you can jump in without having ever read a Green Lantern book and follow along. So I think that's definitely the place to start.
Yeah.
I'm very excited for that.
Yeah, it's gonna be
awesome. Also, hey, next week also, along with the Blackest Night issue, is also our Green Lantern show. So if Mike wants to wait a few days and watch that show with his girlfriend, then maybe they can find out where to start reading.
Nice. A nice little romantic evening, make a little dinner, and watch the Green Lantern show. Yeah.
And if they want to do something dirty on the couch while we're playing in the background, I'm okay with that. I've got no problem with that.
Awkward.
Awkward sexual tension. There it is.
Our next voicemail actually has something to do about watching.
Hey there, guys. This is Jeff from Clayton, Ohio. I had a question about the Watcher from Marvel Comics. I know he only appears during big cosmic events happening usually on Earth or around the galaxy. And I was curious if there's any stories in which the Watcher appeared that you thought that his appearance was unnecessary or didn't quite live up to the expectations that you would think they would have the Watcher appear for. So just curious about that. Thanks a lot, guys. I'll keep listening. Bye.
Yeah, this one time I looked up out of my bedroom window and there was this big bald head just watching me. And wait, that was Connor. Anyway.
I'm sorry.
It was a bad Watcher time.
Look, how many times can I apologize for that?
I don't even know how you got up there. Did you bring a ladder on the subway?
Yes, I told you. I won't like me in the subway either.
I'm sorry. I watched you have sex with your wife. It was wrong.
No one told me. If I knew it was wrong, I wouldn't have done it.
Ugh. So
I won't do it again.
So Uatu the Watcher is one of my favorite Marvel characters, and there have been two recent moments that they completely blew using him in my mind. And the whole idea is that he's sitting there on the moon watching Earth, and he's not allowed to intervene, and when he shows up, it's supposed to be a big deal. You know, like when Galactus came and the Fantastic Four fought him, he was there, you know. He actually intervened in that story, but nonetheless. And in other moments in Marvel history. And yet, Secret Invasion comes to mind, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty big in terms of events. I mean,
yeah, but he didn't. But all of a sudden, he was there watching the fight, and that was it. They never.
Yeah, I think it's not so much he was ever Secret Invasion. I think it was the way they used him at Secret Invasion.
Yes,
usually, yeah. In the past, the Watcher would show up in the first page and tell you, "I'm the Watcher. I'm watching this because it's a big deal."
Yeah,
and then he would throw his arm out like he's opening a curtain, and you would follow into the story, and then right. That's how it worked. Now it's kind of like it was a cheap joke that Bendis put in.
Well, speaking of cheap joke, no, I don't even think Bendis' uses of it was a cheap joke. I think Bendis,
yeah, because it was the whole thing was there for the Spider-Man joke. He was the punchline.
Maybe. Well, the cheap joke. Well, it was there for a joke. Then the cheap joke was recently when the Watcher showed up in Hulk or Red Hulk by Jeff Loeb. And where he's like, I'm here because this is a big moment, and then the Red Hulk punched the Watcher, and that was when I stopped buying Hulk. So
yeah, that was a cheap joke.
That was really cheap and not funny and not, you know, fucking Jeff Loeb. You know, like it was anyway. So yeah, those are some recent examples of the Watcher being misused in my mind. And I honestly, the Watcher hasn't gotten, I think, the proper usage in a very long time.
It's been since the early 90s or late 80s. He really has been used like he used to be.
Well, I thought it was great to use him as the narrator or the intro as a device for the What If issues.
Yeah, but then the last time they used Bendis.
Yeah. That's kind of funny.
It's kind of funny.
So, I don't know. All right, so if you have any questions you want to call in and ask us or any comments you want to make, you can leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697.
Hey, this last week you may have noticed on the site that there was a new Talksplode episode with me and writer Paul Montgomery. We are talking to Scribe of BPRD, the Superman story in this week's Wednesday Comics and other stuff, John Arcudi. It was a really fun conversation. I found the end of it to be extremely inspiring, even though we were talking about John Mellencamp.
He's a name that I've has been around for a while, and like he just works, you know, like he's a solid writer, you know.
Yeah, he's definitely, and you know, like he, you know, he created the mask.
Yeah,
you know, did that and something else really big that is escaping me right now. But he also, you know, he's been doing those Alien Predator comics and stuff too, and like those aren't bad.
Yeah,
like when you hear like bad licensed stuff, it's never the stuff that he's doing. You know, like he's like a working writer, and it's really interesting to talk to those guys.
Yeah.
And he's grizzled.
Slightly grizzled.
Cool. So so San Diego is coming up.
Oh, yay. Oh, yay.
San Diego Comic-Con is in what? It's in 2 weeks? Less than two weeks?
No, it's in a week. Week and a half, if you're listening to this on the beginning of this week. Week and a half from San Diego. If you're going, we're going. And there's going to be a Comic-Con podcasting panel, which Ron will be on, which is on – do you know what day that is on?
Yeah, it's on Thursday at 5:30, I think, in room 32AB. And it's going to be myself and Jimmy from Comic News Insider and Pants from CGS and Bob from the comic book page, I think. And actually, I think Charlito may be making a – from Indie Spinnerack may be making a cameo. So –
Well, that's cool. So, and Josh and I will be in the audience heckling Ron. So come by and join in the fun of that. And also it'll be our traditional San Diego party meetup thing, which will be Friday night. And we'll have more details on that. There'll be a post on iFanboy.com probably this week with all the information on the parties and the panels and everything that's going on. So check that out. If you come to San Diego, please come by to the panel. And definitely come to the party where Ron will get drunk and might take his shirt off.
It'll be awesome. Yeah, and we'll have all the details posted on iFanboy.com, and we'll also talk about it on next week's show. So if you're going to San Diego, it'll definitely be easy to find us and get together, and we'll be great to see you. We can't wait. Yeah. And a lot of the iFanboy staff is going to be there in full force. It's going to be us, Gordon.
Yeah, actually, the biggest turnout of iFanboy staff in the history of iFanboy.
Yes, with some surprise guests.
Not Paul, though. He misbehaved.
Not Paul, yes. So if you dig what we do, you might want to go over check out our sister site, Murmur.com, where we last week we released the second episode of the Murmur podcast, and we were talking about music. It was myself along with Gordon, who you know from iFanboy, as well as Ryan Panagos, who you may also know as Agent M on Twitter, who works at Marvel. We weren't talking about comics, we were talking about music. So we're talking about some of the bands we like and some of the recent kind of records that we've been enjoying. So go to Murmur.com, you can check out the podcast there, as well as the pop culture writing about TV, film, and technology and music and all that fun stuff. So go to murmur.com and check it out.
Awesome. Hey, ifanboy.com is our website. Like we said up there, there's the article about Green Lantern that we did. There's Ron's written reviews for Wednesday Comics, his Book of the Month review, and all sorts of good stuff that goes up there every single day and all sorts of fun discussion. So make sure you go there. We put a lot of work into it. We like it very much, and we think that you'll enjoy it. You can go to ifanboy.com/about, and you can see who we are, as if you need that, but also links to all of the other social networking places that you can find us on the web.
And as you may know from listening to previous podcasts, we do have an iFanboy membership program. Everything we do is free. All these podcasts and the website and everything, we want to keep it that way. But things cost money and we've got expenses and stuff like that. So we're looking for your help. If you enjoy this podcast or if you enjoy the website, reach into your pocket and see if you can help us out. We do everything for free for you, and we want to keep it that way. So we've got a couple of different levels for you. You can sign up for $4 a month or $42 a year. That's the price of one comic book. And for that, you get to be a member. You get a little prize pack with some stickers and buttons, and we give you a free comic book. So we're replacing that comic book you're not buying. So you can sign up for that. If you got a little more money you want to spend, you can spend $10 a month or $100 a year, and that gets you the stickers, the pins, and the comic book, as well as the iFanboy members t-shirt. So if you go to ifanboy.com/store, that's where you can sign up to be a member, and you can also be eligible for giveaways. We're giving away signed books, we're giving away art. We just gave away the Joe Casey signed books with Chris Burnham sketches. We gave away a page of art from Mike Allred. We're going to get a ton of great giveaways after San Diego. So if you want to be eligible for those, you got to be a member. So ifanboy.com/store.
And while you're at ifanboy.com/store, I don't think there was a word, but I'm pushing on. You can buy the Power Responsibility t-shirt, which is only $15. It's limited edition. There aren't many of them left. Then you can get those at ifanboy.com/store. They come in red and the blue. They have no resemblance to any current or former comic book character whatsoever.
None whatsoever.
And we've got a lot of response to the possible Herm shirt reprint lately, and it sounds like that will definitely be happening at some point in the next few months.
If you want one, though, be sure to let us know. Email contact@ifanboy.com, subject line Herm. Let us know. The more people we know that want it, the better chance it will have happening.
Yes, so, the better chance it will have happening.
Yes.
If you write in and you say you want one and then we print them and then you don't buy one, we're going to come to your house.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to kick your ass.
So
I swear to God.
You can get the t-shirts at ifanboy.com/store. You can also go to ifanboy.com/Amazon if you want to buy any graphic novels or comics or video games or movies or music or anything that they sell at Amazon. Helps us out in the process. You can do all your ordering from there, and we also put up the books we talk about in the video show as well as our personal picks. So go to ifanboy.com/Amazon.
Awesome. We do this video show. Connor, he's working on one right now. No reason at all. No, this next week you can look forward to the show on Green Lantern. We're going to go over all the stuff that's in that article I wrote about, and then we will have the link for that as well as the article, and we never have to answer the question again. And this past week was the Miracle Man show, which I thought was really – it got a really big response. I was kind of surprised. People really dug it. You can go to revision3.com/ifanboy to watch that video show or any of the hundreds of shows we've done in the past, or you can even get it on your TiVo.
Yeah. And like we mentioned, if you have any questions, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697.
And writers to review on iTunes. Are we at 500 yet? Did we check? No one checked?
I will check.
Nobody checked. Ron's going to check. So we were getting close to 500 or close over 400. So let's get to 500, people. That's the goal. And while we do that, let's also do that for the video show. Let's get the word out. It's how people find the show when they go to iTunes and search for Comic Book Podcasts. The more reviews there are, the better chance people will to find it. That's how their mysterious algorithm seems to work. So.
We are at 508.
Hey, wow. so now it's the push to 600.
Yes, the push to 600. Let's go. apparently, we have great chemistry. I'm sorry. We have 508 ratings. We have 453 reviews.
See,
my bad.
There we go.
So as the push to 500 continues, we need 47 more reviews. Get in there. Write a review.
Still, good push.
Yeah, totally good push.
Yeah,
good
so push. Get in there. We need 47, you said? 47 more
47
reviews?
47 more, yep. So.
Come on, people. You know you can do that. It's a very, 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 very small percentage of you. So let's get on this.
Yes.
Do it for your mom.
All right. So before we wrap up, I just have two more questions about Wednesday Comics.
Yep.
One, it's in continuity, right?
Fuck you. Two.
Number two, it doesn't fit in my bag and boards.
Number three, so where'd you read your copy?
I'm not saying.
Oh, and with that...
You know, whenever I'm doing dirty things on the couch, I like to put our show on as well. I can't not do dirty things without the show on. Is that too much information?
Yeah, too much information.
I read mine on the bus.